And I'm telling you, people, I went through and did this outline this weekend, and it was just so, again, enlightening to me and refocusing for me. And I just, if it doesn't for me, and I've been around Manitech now for, I don't know, taking the products for almost 12 years and been involved in the business for almost 10, I think that if it has that impact on me, it ought to have the impact on everybody. So it's just, it's always about refreshing our minds of what we need to be doing and where our focus needs to be, and just giving us more insight into what we've left behind. Maybe some of the basic trainings that we've had that we've left behind. So open your ears and eyes to these two chapters and see if you have a response like I did, because it was really, it was a joy for me to read these two chapters, and I came up with a few ahas in my life that I need to work on and straighten out, and I'll share some of that with you as we go through them. But the two chapters for today are chapter 3 and 4, and one of them is called Master Prospectors Know What Their Job Is and What It Is Not. Okay, that's chapter 3. And what is the job of a master prospector? And he starts off in the chapter by talking about an old Chinese philosophy, or what they call a proverb that they have. It's, when you are given a gift of great value, you are now obligated to return the favor many times over. And, of course, that is biblical as well. We know to whom much is given, much is expected. We have many biblical passages that correspond to that. The concept here is pay it forward. It also is very consistent with what we're learning in our go-giver spirit, in our Bob Berg's book about go-giver, that the value that we give should be greater than that which we receive, right? I mean, that's part of one of the go-giver principles. So you can look at how it ties into so much about who we are and where our belief system and our overall, you don't have to go back to Chinese philosophy to get the same philosophy. This is something that is just a truth in our life. It's a truth. It's a biblical truth. It's a Chinese philosophy truth. It's a go-giver truth. It's about paying it forward. It's about truly giving people great value from us, and that's what we need to be doing. And the reason that the Chinese believe in this so strongly is that they believe in the law of the universe, what they call what goes around comes back around. As you sow, so shall you reap. You know, you have to give more in order to receive more. So it's, you have to empty yourself out before you're open to receive more. So all of those principles, again, go back to what they refer to as the law of the universe. I refer to it as a biblical principle, and it's all about what goes around comes back around. So as we give, so shall we receive. As you sow, so shall you reap. We have been given a gift, and the gift is our knowledge about some tremendous products called glyconutrients, and the antioxidants we have, the PhytoMatrix product, which is just a blast for me to talk to people about. I think that product is, you know, knock down, drag out, great. And plus, of course, we love our four core. And we know the great impact they can have on the health of the world and the tremendous business opportunity that accompanies that. So you have two great gifts. You have the gift of a tremendous income opportunity. You have the gift of tremendous products. And our concept is to be out there and pass that gift forward. And that's what this whole Chinese philosophy, law of the universe, is all about. We've been given something great, and we have an obligation to share that. So the master prospector has a job, and we look at the job not as a job but as an obligation. We feel obligated of sharing that incredible gift with everyone and not getting into judgment whether they need it or want the gift or anything else. Our job is what? Is to focus on just sharing with people. Everywhere we go, we share with people this incredible prospect, you know, of having great health and having, you know, financial security in their lives. And that's what we do every day of our lives, because we want to touch and impact lives. So that's that. We know what our job is, and then we need to know what our job isn't. And he talked about the story of the oysters, which I thought was really cute. I had forgotten about this one. I know I'd read this book a number of times in the past, but he talks about the story of the oysters. In every bucket of 100 oysters, and this is what the story is, in every bucket of 100 oysters, there's an average of 10 oysters that contain pearls. So that gives you about a 10% possibility, right? Or 1 out of 10 contain a pearl. And hunting for the pearls is a lot like looking for business builders in Manitech. Most new distributors will pick an oyster out, open it up, and see there's no pearl inside. Now think about you pursuing people that you've pursued in your business. And you open up that oyster, and there's no pearl inside. In other words, you're not finding the heart of a Manitecher. You're not finding somebody really committed. You're not finding somebody who just has the vision, okay? So what new distributors tend to do is they do something very interesting. They carefully place the two halves of the oyster shell back together, and they hold on to it really tight, and they keep it really warm, and they nurture it and nurture it. And about every week or so, they open it up again just to see whether there's a pearl in there. And what's interesting is that they know there are oysters out there with pearls in them. In the bucket, still sitting in your bucket, are oysters with pearls in them. But we'd rather hang on to that pearl, that oyster that we know is empty, and keep nurturing it and keeping it warm and opening it up every week or so, because that's easier to do for us than to go after all those new oysters. But we keep opening that one and hope that eventually when we open it, voila, there will be a pearl. The problem is that we don't create pearls. The oysters create the pearls. So the idea is, as he puts it in his book, secret number three is keep shucking oysters. In other words, our job isn't to keep an empty oyster shell warm and cuddly. Our job is to keep shucking oysters. And if you look at and apply it to the ICANN program, same thing applies. I mean, even though we talk about ICANN being a program that works for anybody, clearly works for anybody. Simple, duplicatable program. But when you walk up to somebody and they look at you and you present them with that business opportunity, a 12-month program where they can make $2,000 to $6,000, and they look at you and they start laughing, you know what? And keep it warm. And you don't try to convince, cajole, manipulate them into seeing something they don't see. Because the reality is even though the program's called ICANN, not everyone can, because they can't if they choose not to. And people are going to make those choices. We have people everywhere making choices not to move forward. So you just move on and find people who see the opportunity and say, you know what, I can do this. And that's what our job is to do. So keep shucking oysters. That means we need to go out there and we need to be present with people. We need to interact with lots of people and not try to make a mountain out of a molehill, is what we say. The master prosperers share their gift. They do not convince. Another really important part. They share the product and the opportunity the best way possible and let a prospect to say yes or no. Either answer your prospect gives is right. Why is it right? Because in their mind, it's right. It's not about you. It's about them. They're the ones who need to change their mind, not you. And one of the things he says that he does in his presentations, I'm going to share this with you because it's really insightful. Some of you might want to use some of this language because it might work for you, but he talks about how we respond to people. So when you talk to people, you're sharing with them, and what you do, you build rapport. That's always first, and we're going to talk about that in one of the later chapters, and how to build rapport. So we build rapport with a prospect, and then just before you're going to present to them the product or the opportunity, you say something along the lines like this. You know, Sarah, over the next 30 minutes or so, I'm going to share with you information about a company I'm associated with, the people behind it, their vision and integrity. I'll also introduce you to the products or services we offer, what they do, and why so many people are so excited about them. And then I'll quickly share with you an opportunity to earn as much money as you'd like while having the freedom of working for yourself. Now, Sarah, if by the end of this short presentation you don't see any value in this for you, I can respect that. I realize that this is not for everyone, but at least I informed you about it so that you could decide that for yourself. However, if you do see value, I'd like to discuss that value with you, so if you choose, I can help you get started immediately. Does that sound okay to you? Pretty great language. So if you just built rapport with people and you open the door like that, do you think that would work for you? And that's how he suggests that we open the eyes to people. And that's, just say, hey, I have something to share with you. And, it's going to share with you the company, the people, what vision we have, the incredible products and what the difference it makes, and the incredible business opportunity that could provide your family with financial security. If you don't like what you see, fine, that's your decision to make. But if you decide you see some value, then let's immediately look forward and share that value so that I can step up and support you in getting started immediately. Is that okay with you? Get their consensus. Get their approval on it. It's a great languaging. Do you guys, is everybody familiar with that languaging? Is that something I should type up and send out to everybody? Is that something that could support you if you had that languaging?
That would be great.
Yeah.
If you could send it out.
Yes, okay. It would.
Let me do that for you. I'll do it. As soon as this call is over, I'll have Lydia type it up and send it out. Because I think it's something that, you know, I looked at it and I said, you know, it's really cute. I don't really do that. I kind of do it in my own way, but I'm not quite complete in how I approach people. You know, and I'm always looking, no matter how many years I've done it, no matter how successful we can look at ourselves as being, there's always ways of tweaking that ourselves. And that's what I look for. I'm always looking at how can I be better? What changes can I make in my own approach? And I think that kind of languaging, you don't have to use it precisely that language, but the important aspects of it are to introduce that this is what you're it's like an introduction on what you're about to embark on. So you're really laying the foundation. And you're giving the people the right to say no. You're giving them the freedom. You know, if this isn't for you, I totally understand, because it's really a program that's not for everyone. But if you do see value in it, you know, then let's discuss what that value you see so that I can support you in getting started. I mean, it really opens that gate for them to see value as well. And I find it hard to believe you can make that presentation after you do your presentation that you're not going to show some value to somebody. Okay, so I'll type that up and send it out and see how you can add to your languaging around it. So maybe it's not so short and cut and dried. Maybe you have a little bit more softness to your approach to people to give them that freedom. So that's our job. So you understand that, again, it's not about if somebody says no or yes. That's not their, in their minds, it's right for them, and that's what you honor and respect that. And one more thought about the law of the universe is some distributors are just negative and complainers. Do you ever see those? They seem to take every opportunity to talk to others about what is wrong with this or that. And you'll find those people in your lives. And it seems this topic comes up more times than not in out of books that we read and the things that I see. And I think it's because we just have people who are cynical or negative by nature, and they're going to show up in different places in your life. And the important thing is that if you ever meet a master prospector, you're not going to see that in their character. And the reason you're not going to see it is because they don't ever allow those kind of issues to control their lives. They always come from solution. Or even if it's, you know, they could come in and get involved in a group conversation and somebody starts intently on their story of discontent or blame a master prospector will do this. He'll stop and he'll go, you know what, can I ask you a question? Am I a part of this problem? And if the people say no, then you ask the next question. Am I a part of the solution? And once again, they'll stop shortly and look at you and say, well, no, you're not part of the solution either. And then you can say, then I choose not to be a part of it at all. And you, if I'm not part of the problem and I'm not part of the solution, then I don't want to be part of it at all, right? Because then all it is what? It's just belly aching as they go away from that kind of nonsense. It's just gossipy kind of negative talk that just causes people to get disturbed. So you just move on. If I'm not part of the problem and I'm not part of the solution, then let's not discuss it, let's move on. So you just move on. So that's the way you operate. Master prospectors force themselves to be positive. It's not really, you know, a forcing of us to be positive. It's just that we stay, because that's really not the correct language. What happens is that we choose to just come from positive at every opportunity. We choose to always look at things no matter what the problem is. When somebody presents a problem, and trust me, we all have problems. We all have issues in our life. Some of us wallow in those issues and they let that control our lives. I have that happen with some of my top leaders in my organization. They'll let a problem control their life. And no matter how many times I preach and coach and teach, they've got to choose to be different. They've got to choose to look at life differently. And it's just a choice that we make. And the choice has to look like what? You have to come from optimism. You have to come from positive. It's just, how do I solve the problem? How do I come from solution? So the action steps in this chapter, as we learn how to come from positive, we learn how to what? That the story of the oysters, we know what our job is, and that is to share. And our job isn't to convince, cajole, manipulate. Our job is to make a presentation. Some will, some won't. So what next? Go on. But force ourselves to get out there and share with people. We want to be in a sharing mode. How do we develop these kind of behaviors? And here are some action steps that he gives us. Number one, have I been doing more convincing than sorting with my prospects? And most of us will probably answer more convincing, okay? And that's a big aha for you to just stare at and say, wow, I'm constantly out there convincing. In fact, this is an intriguing thing. I'll tell you about a story about the ICANN program. Gail Hoag called me. She's a presidential from Colorado, and she called me early on January. She had gotten her ICANN pack, and she had heard about the program, ordered one. She read through it from start to finish. I mean, every word in it. She got me on the phone, and we spent about an hour on a phone call in early January. And I still tell people she asked me the most incredible question that I've ever been asked about the ICANN program. She said, you know, Mary Jo, I've looked at this. I can't see any reason why. So you tell me, in your view, why do you think or what would make this program fail? And I thought about it for about, 10, 15 seconds because I thought, what a great question. And I thought, you know, the number one way this program will fail is if we go out there as Manatech Associates and we try to convince and cajole and manipulate people to get started in ICANN. Because if we try to do that with them, we're getting people to get involved against their will. I said, what we need to do is present this program to people, and if they have a negative reaction or they move in a different direction, you know what? It's not for them. Next. Don't try to cajole, manipulate, and convince. It's about, hey, this is a terrific opportunity. You need to look at it. I really want to bless you with it and show you this gift. I understand you may not agree with it. You may not be for you, but, you know, if you find value in it, then let's get started because I'm here to support you. Boom. And you show them the program. What a wonderful way to approach it. And I said, and so it was all about the same thing. Get out of convincing. What you're doing is sorting. Because even though we say the ICANN program is for everybody, anybody can do it, they have to want to do it. I mean, there's a lot of things. I kind of come from that biblical philosophy. You know, anything's possible through him. So, yeah, but if you don't believe it's possible, you know what? You're going to be right. You know that famous saying, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're always going to be right. I love that statement because it's so true, because belief system is so powerful. So look at yourself, more convincing than sorting. The second thing is, if yes, what can I do more or less of in my presentation to do more sorting and less convincing? And I just gave you a great tool today on the call, the language that I'm going to send out to you, about opening the door for people to say no. It's okay. If you don't see any value in this, I know this is not for everyone. Make that statement in every one of your presentations. See what happens when you make that statement. You give people freedom to make a decision one way or the other, but you're going to listen to their decision, not your cajoling, manipulating, convincing people. In reviewing my list of current prospects, new associates, who are the oysters that I'm keeping warm? Some of you have a whole pot of them in your hopper, you know? Maybe it's time to take that pot of oysters off the burner and get some new oysters, right? So you need, what action steps do I need to take? I can tell you that one. Get out and find more people. You're trying to, you know, nurture people that don't have pearls inside. And D, do I find myself listening to negative complaining people? If so, what do I need to do? Well, we talked about that as well. How do you stay away from negative people? Make decisions to move forward. You know, you can even use the two-step process he did in the book. You say, am I part of the problem? Am I part of the solution? If I'm neither, then I'm out of here. You're done. Okay, so that's chapter three. Chapter four is chapter four is know what to marry. Sorry, I just skipped over another one. Know what to marry. That's kind of cute. When I saw that chapter title, I was like, know what to marry? Yikes, what can that be about? Anyway, I already have my husband. I don't know what they're talking about. But it's know what to marry, and we'll talk about what the whole chapter is on. And this is another great one that had some great insight for me as well. Recognize that there are different people. Everybody's different. We all know that. All you have to do is look at your spouse and you know that people are different, right? I mean, that's something we can all kind of giggle and chuckle about. We're all different. We all come from different walks, different attitudes, different belief systems, different everything. But what Kalish does in the book, he talks about, after all his education and all his network marketing experience, he says, really, when you make presentations, there are three different types of people that we present to. First of all, there's the people who really enjoy the meeting and get tremendous value from it, and they're in one group. And the neat thing about those people is that those people really make you feel great. They make you feel like all the hard work up to that point is worth it. And it's intriguing. Do you know which one of those people, which people those are as you're giving a presentation? And I'll share with you this just this last week when I was in McAllen, Texas. It was really amazing. I did a presentation on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, same location. And we had, you know, a dozen or so people, you know, between dozen and 20 people maybe each night. at each of the locations. And the first night, the crowd was totally interactive. And it's hard not to be interactive with me because I ask the crowd so many questions. I just love to get the crowd involved. Okay, so we had an interactive crowd, and we signed up everybody who came to that meeting. The next night, it was a little smaller group. I couldn't extract an answer from the crowd. I mean, it was like, it was the deadest group I'd ever done a presentation. I mean, I was like, I didn't know. I mean, I was getting confounded as a speaker. And because I speak so often, I don't really even have to think about the words coming out of my mouth. I spend almost all my attention on the audience. So for this experience for me, it was really crazy. It was like, oh, my gosh, are these people, they were just so dead. You know, and I just went through my presentation, but I kept adding joy in it, and I tried to make them laugh, and I might have spruced some things up just a little bit more, and I think I might have gotten a chuckle out of this one or a chuckle out of it. You know, I mean, it was very hard. And I got done with the, you know, I presented the products, and then I presented the ICANN program. And at the end, we had five or six new people who were there. The rest of them were associates, you know. And at the end of the night, everybody hung around, and we got all of them to sign up. And so it was so cute because I don't know if Scott is on the phone, but I looked at her and I said, did you notice the crowd tonight? She goes, oh, my gosh, Mary Jo, it was like pulling teeth. It was, and I go, I get it. I was up. And she said, but look at the results. And we got, so I'm going to tell you people that you can't judge by the crowd's reaction which category they're in. So you don't always know whether the people are really getting it or they're pulling it in and they're really enjoying it or getting tremendous value because people respond differently. So I just want to highlight that fact to you. You never know, so just keep putting your best effort forth and work with that crowd because, you know, they could all be like analyst types that just want, you know, are loving the information, just storing it and keeping it in. So that's one type of person. The second type of people are people who need more time to process, which is typically where you find your analysts. They're the ones that you know, what you're doing when you give a presentation is you're introducing a new paradigm for them, and their belief system might be challenged by what you're introducing. So they might find themselves a little bit stretched to agree with what you're saying because it's outside their normal belief system. And these people are going to sit back and they're going to want to assimilate the data. They could be analysts or just need to research more because they need more data, or they might just have a few trust issues. In other words, they're kind of come in with a little cynical nature and lack of trust, and they might need to prove that your information is correct. So they just need more time. And when you come across these people, it's pretty evident to them because they typically will ask you more questions. They'll come across positive, but they'll just want to know more information or ask for more questions, need more things. And these people will just need more time or more encouragement, and they'll eventually come around. So that's your second group of people. And then you have your third group types of people. These are people who were not ready at all for what was being said. In other words, you're going to hear responses like this. Oh, I've heard all that before. That stuff doesn't work. I don't believe in that nutrition stuff. You guys are just trying to make money off of us. Da, da, da. And you hear that. It's typically strong negativity that comes back. And that's the group we're going to talk about today because that's the group that gives most people the hardest time. And it's a group that tends to rob you. And it robs you of your passion, it robs you of your joy because you sit back and one of the first things you do is when you come across people like that is you say to yourself, you know what, I gave the same presentation to all these different people. How can somebody respond like this? And then you start looking at what's wrong with my presentation, what's wrong with me. You start getting into all that stuff. And that's where I put the words in the outline, just stop it. You got to really get it that it's not about you. It has nothing to do with you. You have a resounding impact on all these people, and then some people are analyst type, and then you have a group of people that are negative. It's not about you. You need to stop reacting to these people. You have to stop allowing them to control your emotional state, your positive attitude, your passion for the business, your passion for the products. You need to acknowledge one thing, and this is a great one that he brought up in the book, and I think it's a great. I think that some of us don't look at it this way, that always there are going to be these three groups of people. They exist in this world. There will always be who complain and who are negative. You just need to recognize them and see them for what they are. They're doing exactly what they're supposed to do. Now, I don't mean supposed to do in terms of it's ethically, morally, spiritually, any of those right. Understand that's not what I'm saying, nor is that what John Kalin is saying. He's just saying they fall into that group of people who are absolute naysayers. And so if they're in that group, they're just performing in that group. They're just putting on their performance. They're like acting out their performance in that group. So it didn't matter if you were King Kong. It didn't matter if you were the greatest orator on the face of the earth. You were not going to sway that person because they came in there on their own agendas. So you need to release it for what it is. And so many of us fail to see that. You know, it's kind of another way of looking at, you know, how do I take rejection? You know, this is another thing. We take it so personal when it has nothing to do with us. So if this helps you understand that group of people, that one-third or whatever it represents of the people out there, you're going to have a group of people that are going to be automatic naysayers. And you just have to look at it like they're just doing what they're supposed to do. What a wonderful mechanism of being able to accept that as a part of our reality and be able to move on. So another way to look at it is this, you know, it gets to the point where you say, does it make sense to focus our energy on what we can control instead of what we can't control? So the first two groups we can work with. People are excited about it. We can help educate them more and get them started and support them. People who need more information to move forward, what can we do with those people? We can help get them more information. We can support them in answering their questions, getting them on three-way calls. You know, those are areas where we have more control over what transpires. So our activities need to be really, you know, we need to plant seeds, we need to sow those categories of people. When we get across the people that are negative, they're just trying to mock you or intimidate you or set you off, or they go, no, oh, this network marketing, you know, they give all this kind of sassy stuff to us and they just want to just unnerve you, and they're just negative naysayers, well, we need to understand that that's not an area that we're going to necessarily control. So, he talks about even going, you have to let some of these people go in that third group. I mean, sometimes when people complain about network marketing, I love to look at that as a challenge to try to help them go through a paradigm shift. So I give them my classic response to network marketing or, you know, paradigm scheme. And most of you have heard that before, but I just give them an opportunity. If they still are negative after that, which really doesn't happen a lot because it's such a moving statement, but the intriguing thing is they just came with it and they're going to leave with it. They're just holding on to it with your life. So you know what? Here comes the serenity prayer, right? Everybody knows that one. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot be changed, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that's really where we need to sit. We need to really grasp onto that serenity prayer in our lives so that we know that there are certain people we're just not going to shift. And it's okay because they're doing what? Exactly what they're supposed to be doing, because they're in that group of people, that one-third of people that's going to come out as naysayers. And it's not necessarily 33%. It's that third group that we see, because I think it's far less. I would say it's like less than 10% of the people, but you're going to have those people. Has everyone experienced some of those people in their network marketing experience, or am I the only one? Anyone else? No one wants to get off mute and tell me about their...
You're not the only one.
Okay, thanks, Susan. Yeah, good. So we can see that they exist. But is this, Susan, a new way of looking at it for you?
Yeah, and, you know, it's a really good reminder about not feeling like you have to keep nurturing oysters that not only don't have a pearl, but that have something, you know, negative inside
yep.
them, because mm-hmm. it does impact you. And it's like, I mean, last week I had a couple of experiences, you know, going back to people who trying to reignite them, and like
uh-huh.
got a lot of negativity thrown at me, and it was overwhelming, you know.
Sure. And it does rob you of your joy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
then I found myself
questioning. Mm-hmm.
Having to, you know, struggle to pull up my energy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just sort of a reminder of, like, you don't have to internalize it. Just let it go. That's
right.
Like that person. And you know, when I think about it, it's like some of the people I'm thinking of, like, that is what they always do.
Right.
And
just
I keep going back for
about
more.
Yeah.
I don't know why I go back for more, but.
It's like we're into self, you know what you call it, sadist masochism type or something.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we need some self-flagellation or something with that. And it's like, oh my gosh. And that's another reason why we always talk about surrounding yourself with positive people, you know, keeping in that environment. It's one of the reasons we tell people to go to all the regionals and the national conventions to try to stay with people who are positive and looking forward and are building and growing their businesses. Even if we're going through some hardships, you know, find people who are, you know, really dynamic. I said this morning to Lydia after I, you know, the weekend presenting, you know, drafting this document, I looked at Lydia and I says, you know, let's make a list of all the people in our business that are really positive and really anxious to create greatness. And I said, let's pour into them and just see what happens in the business if we pour into those people. And, you know, it was just an incredible, you know, concept to find, because some people just get tied up in negativity and look at, hang with the people that are positive and stay in that realm. Because, you know, there's always going to be hardships out there, but people need to work through them. You know, you try to love on them and pour into them, but they've got to make choices to move forward, too. So anyway, so again, the Serenity Prayer is great, and keep that in mind all the time so that you just keep it right in front of you that, you know, it's about things you can control and getting the wisdom to acknowledge what you can and can't control, and don't let other people rob you of your passion or your energy or your love and your commitment to make a difference in people's lives. And the incredible thing is about why does, if you really look at the third group, the naysayers and the negative people and the people that are always coming down excited, if they really wanted to be honoring, I mean, is it, if you went to hear somebody talk and you disagreed with what they said, you know, first of all, you look at the person, what did they put into their talk? I mean, they spend time and energy and they have a passion for what they're reflecting. So you can go up to them and say, you know what, I really appreciate what you did here tonight, and thanks so much for presenting this to us. It's just not for me. Now that's honoring to somebody, because you're honoring them for the time and energy and effort they took to do that. But why is it that we find that so hard to do? You know, a lot of times, and I looked at myself here, this is a big aha for me, because sometimes when I go out and hear people and, I can feel myself, you know, wanting immediately to tell them why they're all wrong. And that's not what we need to be about. What we need to be about is honoring people for what they do. If we're not interested in what they have, then you just tell them we're just not interested. You know, I'm just not interested in what you have. We don't have to, like, browbeat them and be naysayers about how awful it is what they're doing, or they shouldn't do it, or that all our judgments spew out. That doesn't necessarily have to transpire. But we have a tendency to do that. Instead of honoring people for the time and energy and the efforts they took forward, just to come forward and do a presentation for you or introduce something to you. If you're not open to it, you're not open to it. But that's not a time where you say disparaging things or undercut somebody else. So we all need to be careful about how we respond so we stay out of that third group, too. I don't want to be a part of that as well. I want to be able to honor people and taking energy and efforts to move forward in their lives. So, and why do people typically do that? Why do people typically get into that role of being naysayers? Ooh, getting dry throat. And what John Kalin says in there is that he tends to emphasize the fact that a lot of these people want to be in control. They have the need to be in control routine going on in their life. And when they don't feel they're in control, when somebody else is speaking and in control of the room, they feel like they have to take some kind of action to regain control or regain attention or get something. There's another group that I added in the outline as well. It's not just people that need to be in control. It's also people who feel they have to be right. So that's what they need. Their need to be right dictates everything. So they're stuck in their need to be right or their need to be in control, and that's what keeps them stuck in that. And that's why they come out as naysayers, because they're not in control or feeling right when somebody else is teaching them something new. The other thing he looks at is this one, which I think is really huge as well, that if you really want to be open to listen to somebody else, it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage from a person to be really open to listen to somebody else's ideas. Why is that? Because it challenges your current beliefs. And if nothing's ever challenged, nothing has ever changed. So what happens is when we open ourselves to really listen to somebody, we are getting challenged. We have that challenge going on about maybe we're not, maybe what we've been thinking wasn't right. Maybe we need to look at our lives differently or look at our approach to something differently. And that's when change enters in, and everybody goes, oh, my gosh, change. And, you know, change is typically one of those things that breeds a lot of fear from the majority of people. But change is good, and change is inevitable. It's inevitable. and change is about, I want to be better. I want to be green and growing versus ripe and rotting. You know, so we should always look with open arms to change. But truly listening to somebody else in their beliefs is going to be a courageous act that we take on. Stephen Covey, if you've read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he tells us in there when he talks about seek first to understand and then be understood, which is one of my favorite chapters in that book. They're all great, but that's a really super one. He talks about empathic listening, and he talks about how empathic listening is where we like blank slate. We get rid of all our judgments, our attitudes, and all we do is just listen. We really just causes you to be very vulnerable, and this, it's the same thing that Kaylin's just saying here. Why? Because when we really listen and we blank slate, that means we become open to change, and that's what causes us to be vulnerable. So it does take courage for us to be, you know, great listeners and listen to other people's ideas and open and ready. So a negative person's comments are not about you. They're simply about, because you are simply the messenger. It is the message that they might be rejecting, but not you as the messenger. So it's not your fault. Get rid of that idea. If someone reacts to your message, your gift that you're giving negatively, it is probably because they lack the courage. Listen to this, Kaylin says, they lack the courage necessary to entertain the thought of change in the first place. Woo, that was a big, big thing. It's got fear of change that causes people to react to us negatively sometimes when we present our program around the products and or the business opportunity. So our challenge today is to see that daily, you know, open our eyes, send our message of hope and for a better future, and find people who receive our gift, and don't let those who don't receive it rob us of stamina. We just can't allow that to happen because it just robs us of our future. So the bottom line in this chapter was to marry yourself to the quality and the frequency of your message. Marry yourself to the quality and the frequency of your message. The quality, spend time listening to your presentation, improving it, making it impactful. Be your best. Show your heart. People don't care. One of my favorite sayings, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Count how many questions you ask your prospects. The more questions you ask, the better, because you're getting them actively involved in the presentation. And that's your quality. So marry yourself to the quality of your presentation and the frequency. Talk to someone every day. Make it a habit to share your information every day of your life with somebody out there, because it's such a gift, such an incredible gift to give. And then the 3 action steps around this are just basically, what are some of the things I can do to continually improve the quality of my presentation? And there are plenty of those ideas out there. It's about, you know, getting feedback, getting people to give you feedback on your presentations. I always look for that. I always honor people who give me feedback. Feedback isn't truth, people. Understand the word feedback is just somebody else's opinion about what they just experienced. So you can take it or leave it, but it's important to always open the floodgates to get feedback. Right? How many times a week am I committed to making my presentation? You make that determination for yourself. I love the story of Niall Pratt. He's one of my favorite guys in Manitech, and his story goes back to the fact that when he first started seeing a difference in his, I believe it was his niece, who was in the hospital with a extremely chronic condition. Okay. Don't use names of diseases. Anyway, started seeing some incredible results, some, you know, extremely positive results in her health. He started sharing, and he made a determination. First he started sharing. He said, okay, I'm going to talk to so many people. And then he said, okay, I'm going to start signing up one person a week. He made a commitment. So he had to share so many people to sign up one a week. And then he said, then he moved forward after a couple months on that. He said, okay, I'm going to start signing up one person a day. And that's what he did to himself. And he approached as many people as it required on a daily basis to get one person registered each day of his life. And Niall, of course, came out of nowhere and became presidential, just like a rocket shot. And it's his conviction. It's his discipline and his conviction to do that. So you just make a determination. How many times a week are you committed to making your presentation to people? And then the third action step is, what structure do I need to put in place in my life to ensure I meet the commitment and two above? In other words, what disciplines do you need? What do you need to put in place to make sure that you're doing it? Your lifestyle commitments. Every time you leave the house, you say, I'm going to present at least to one person before I come home. that means you might have to stop at an extra place just to find somebody to talk to. But that's okay, you know. But it's kind of fun to just put ourselves in a posture where we're out there sharing as many times as we can and making a commitment and following through with that commitment to ourselves, because we truly have an awesome gift to share. And I keep seeing, you know, the incredible results out there in the field, and the testimonials are just off the charts. And every day that I travel, I just love traveling because people tell me about what's going on in their lives, health-wise and financial-wise, and it's just such a blessing to look at what these products and what the income opportunity can do for people. So that's it. So everybody got that? So know what their job is and what it's not, and know what to marry. Those are your two keys for today. All right? Everybody got it? Yoo-hoo! And I will send that information. Any questions or any comments? Did this touch anyone's life today that maybe wants to share about, did you learn something new or see something differently?
Mary Jo,
uh-huh.
I guess a lot of people don't notice Star 7 or something, but and I thought it was great. There were a lot of really good things in this call today.
Great. Yeah. And not necessarily new, right, Susan, kind of, but just to reiterate them. Yeah. Maybe a new way to look at them.
Right. Mm-hmm. All really good things.
Great.
Oh, my gosh, you helped me unload a lot of baggage for this week.
Great. Good, good. Take those bags off. Get that knapsack off your back, all those rocks, and just dump them out, okay? Yahoo.
Yeah.
Yahoo. Great. Great, great, great.
I think I have a lot of oysters that have no possibility at all.
They're never going to have pearls, huh?
They aren't. And, you know, and I really have been holding them way too much.
Yeah, great. Take that bucket and throw it back in the ocean and scoop up some new ones. There you go.
Thank you for the reminder.
You bet.
Yes, Joe, the oyster story was tremendous for me, too.
Yeah, great. I know, it's such a great story, and I totally, you know, until I read the book again, there it is staring at me. That's why it's so wonderful to review these principles, because they're so true. Yeah. Great, great. All right,
Hi,
you guys.
Hi, Mary Jo.
Uh-huh.
A question sort of off topic. I went to your website to change my email address because I have to, and it keeps bouncing me back.
Okay, what I want you to do is I can't. You're talking about the ICANN 2 website?
No,
you're talking about Manatrain?
Mm-hmm.
You know what you want to do? Sign up. Take your new email address and just sign up as a new person with a new email.
It won't let me do that.
It won't let you do that.
No.
I don't know what that's about. You know what I want you to do?
I've had trouble with the ICANN program, too.
You know what I want you to do? Send Lydia an email on that. She will help support you on that, okay? Lydia.s@att.net.
At att.net.
Yeah.
Okay,
Lydia.
Thank you.
Lydia.s@att.net. She'll help you with that, okay? We'll make sure
thank
to get
you.
It straightened out for you. You bet. Okay. All right, guys, have a great week. Go out there and shuck those oysters, okay? It's going to be
right.
Our new
thank you.
Our new
thank
statement.
You.
You bet.